Welcome to Understanding and Healing Trauma, a publication by the Wellness Society. I'm Crystal Palmer, and I'll be your narrator. Thank you for choosing to listen, and let's begin. Introduction. It is politically convenient for policymakers to emphasize individual biology in ways that decontextualize mental health problems and thus deflect scrutiny from damaging social systems. Childhood abuse and neglect, adulthood assault, poverty, and discrimination have devastating personal consequences, yet medicalizing subsequent distress permits a level of denial and distancing that absolves those in power of responsibility for addressing injustice and instituting legislative change. Eleanor Longden et al. Over 50% of people who try to access mental health services have experienced trauma, defined by the American Psychological Association, APA, as a person's emotional response to an extremely negative, disturbing event. Despite the indisputable link between trauma and poor mental well-being, our current mental health system pays little attention to our past experiences. Our system emphasizes labels, diagnoses, biology, not understanding what happened to us and the understandable impact it has on us. Our goal with this audiobook and our accompanying tools is to help you feel validated, understood, and empowered. First, let's clarify. What kind of experiences can lead to trauma? Here's a list. One-time traumatic events, such as an accident, injury, or natural disaster. Childhood physical and/or sexual abuse. Active childhood emotional abuse, such as parents or carers intentionally scaring, demeaning, or verbally abusing you. Passive childhood emotional abuse, such as parents or carers being emotionally unavailable, expressing negative attitudes towards you, or having developmentally inappropriate interactions with you. Childhood neglect, when parents or carers fail to meet our basic needs such as food, education, or medical care. Chronic parentification, a role reversal where a child persistently takes on responsibilities beyond their developmental capacity. Witnessing domestic abuse, experiencing sexual violence, losing a parent or carer, being bullied, harassed, or socially excluded, chronic loneliness, experiencing stigma and/or discrimination, experiencing poverty, witnessing or being involved in violent crime, military combat or exposure to war-related trauma. Long-term caregiving responsibilities, especially in abusive or neglectful environments. Medical trauma, e.g., invasive surgeries, prolonged hospitalizations, or chronic illness. Accidental or intentional injury that leads to lasting physical or emotional scars. Trauma can vary greatly in its nature and impact depending on individual experiences, coping mechanisms, and support systems. The key is that the experience overwhelms a person's ability to cope. Research shows that experiencing childhood emotional abuse can be just as damaging as experiencing childhood physical and/or sexual abuse. In a brain scan, relational pain, such as the pain felt whilst being isolated as a form of childhood punishment, can look the same as physical abuse. Similarly, active and passive emotional abuse can be just as damaging. There's sometimes a misconception that to experience trauma, there must be a catastrophic event or a definitive moment where the trauma happened. Trauma that occurs over a prolonged period of time is now recognized and referred to as complex trauma. The label Complex Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, CPTSD, has been given to describe the set of symptoms that can develop in response to prolonged, repeated experience of interpersonal trauma. CPTSD is a relatively new diagnostic label. Some of the symptoms of CPTSD are very similar to those of borderline personality disorder, and not all mental health professionals are aware of CPTSD. As a result, some people are given a diagnosis of BPD or another personality disorder when CPTSD is more appropriate. For people on the CPTSD spectrum, it might not be until much later in life that they start to make comparisons between themselves and others around them, realizing how trauma has impacted them. The impact of complex trauma. If you feel safe and loved, your brain becomes specialized in exploration, play, and cooperation. If you are frightened and unwanted, it specializes in managing feelings of fear and abandonment. Bessel van der Kolk. Experiencing complex trauma is related to the following difficulties which impact your mental health and well-being. Experiencing ongoing physical anxiety, i.e., chest tightness, breathing difficulties, muscle tension, digestive issues, restlessness, and an inability to relax. Being prone to mental anxiety and intrusive thoughts. Living in a state of hypervigilance, being extremely sensitive to your surroundings. Experiencing intense and/or rapidly changing emotions, sleep disturbances, problems with feeling and/or expressing emotions, difficulties in developing and maintaining relationships, feeling as though you're inherently flawed or damaged, experiencing chronic shame, feeling as though you're completely different from other people. Having an unclear sense of identity, relying on other people to define who you are and how you should behave. Finding it difficult to trust others. Experiencing fear of abandonment. Problems with assertiveness, asking for help and saying no. Problems with memory and concentration. Addiction problems. Impulsive or risk-taking behaviors, experiencing derealization and/or depersonalization, problems with sensory processing and hand-eye coordination, eating problems, struggling with parenting, experiencing hallucinations, self-harming and/or suicidal thoughts. Another common impact of trauma is trauma reenactment, what Freud labeled the compulsion to repeat. A common example of this is being attracted to romantic partners who cause us emotional pain. There are a few theories as to why this happens. Some people believe it's an unconscious attempt for us to resolve a painful situation from the past by mastering a similar situation in the present. Others think it stems from our brain's instinctive link between familiarity and survival. We naturally gravitate toward the familiar, as it represents what's kept us alive up to this point. Another theory is that stress hormones are in some ways addictive. We get used to the stimulation of cortisol and seek situations that maintain our emotional arousal. If we're used to cortisol-fueled relationships, healthy relationships may have a boring feel to them in comparison. Another reason for trauma reenactment is the normalization of abuse, meaning that trauma feels normal instead of unhealthy. Whatever the cause, trauma reenactment keeps us stuck. Becoming aware of your patterns and changing them is key to pursuing a more fulfilling life. In this audiobook, we'll focus on four important ways to heal trauma: self-education, trauma-informed therapies, physical movement, breathing and meditation practices, and relational healing. We'll gain valuable insights from both trauma experts and trauma survivors. We hope this offers a balanced perspective that combines scientific knowledge with real-world stories of recovery. Finally, we'll highlight 9 key signs of trauma healing, providing you with an objective way to track your progress. Part 1. Self-education. Complex trauma impacts your mind and body in profound ways. The good news is that your brain is plastic and your body wants to heal. We can't change what happened to us, but we can change the impact it has on us. It's important to note that any approach to addressing trauma is only helpful if you're not too overwhelmed by it physiologically and emotionally. Seek the support of a trained professional if you feel overwhelmed by your trauma. Educating ourselves about our trauma and the impact it's had on us is the crucial first step to healing. As one of our respondents said when asked what's helped them the most, "For me, it's been knowledge, books and conversations and classes. It's led to understanding of why things happened, why I am the way I am, and it gave me great advice on different things to do at different times that have been really helpful, like identifying cycles or triggers." For conversations with others to help you understand your trauma, we recommend the CPTSD community on Reddit. 3 important areas trauma survivors focus on during their self-knowledge journey include differentiating between mental and physical anxiety, increasing feelings of safety, and trauma integration and tuning into emotions. Let's delve into these. Differentiating between mental and physical anxiety. Different methods are required for addressing mental and physical anxiety, although they're often interconnected. Mental anxiety examples include hypothetical worry, i.e., what if thoughts, catastrophizing, when your thoughts jump to worst-case scenarios, i.e., making a mountain out of a molehill, threat scanning, when your mind searches the environment for what you fear, often associated with your mind assigning meaning to innocuous events, threat imagery, when your mind produces thoughts or mental imagery around threatening or unwanted situations, aka intrusive thoughts. Thoughts and feelings of unreality, of the self and the world. On the other hand, physical anxiety examples include breathing difficulties, for example, feeling as if you can't get enough air, chest tightness, heart palpitations, and irregular heartbeat, digestive issues, muscle tension, headaches, restlessness, ringing in the ear, general aches, pains, and tense muscles, tingling or numbness in the arms, fingers, toes, or around the mouth. Mental anxiety is easier to manage through cognitive-based strategies. If you've received cognitive behavioral therapy and haven't gotten much out of it, it may be because your main concern is physical anxiety. Here are some examples of how you can address mental anxiety: cognitive restructuring, cognitive diffusion, cognitive distraction, self-soothing, radical acceptance, and general mindful awareness. The Thinking Slow method inside the Mental Well-Being Toolkit is a step-by-step guide to reducing mental anxiety. Some examples of how to address physical anxiety include yoga, breathing exercises, progressive muscle relaxation, PMR, exercise, spending time in nature, and listening to alpha wave-inducing sounds, such as nature sounds, binaural beats, or calming music. Increasing feelings of safety. Another common theme in trauma healing is that of safety. Experiencing trauma causes changes in several areas of the brain, including the amygdala, hippocampus, and prefrontal cortex. The amygdala, our brain's fear center, can become overactive, causing heightened vigilance and an exaggerated perception of threats. Next, the hippocampus, which helps distinguish the past from the present, can become suppressed. This can lead to flashbacks or the overwhelming feeling that past trauma is still happening, even when it's not. Finally, there's the prefrontal cortex, the rational part of the brain responsible for regulating emotions. Trauma can disrupt this area, making it harder to respond calmly and logically to situations. As a result of these changes, people with trauma often live in a constant state of fight, flight, or freeze. Healing trauma is learning how to feel safe in your own body, around others, and in the world. Working on reducing both your mental and physical anxiety can help you achieve this. Trauma integration and tuning into emotions. Another common theme for trauma survivors is the importance of trauma integration. As Bessel van der Kolk puts it, knowing what we know and feeling what we feel without getting too overwhelmed by it. One trauma survivor commented, "It's really hard and I'm rubbish at it, so it comes in fits. But when I am able to sit down and have a dialogue with myself about what I'm feeling, whether it's as small as my feelings about the weather that day, or as big as overwhelming emotions buried under trauma, not what I should or could or would or might be feeling, that's where I find the most joy." Another noted, "One of my biggest coping mechanisms is intellectualizing emotionally charged stuff, but I'm, very slowly, learning how to pause and take a breath and ask my inner child how she feels, not just telling her what I think." If you feel rejected by your caregivers, you learn to shut down and to ignore what you feel, which changes the wiring in your brain areas associated with bodily and self-awareness. This detachment from bodily sensations is often referred to as alexithymia, or the inability to recognize and describe one's emotions. When the brain's emotional and bodily awareness areas are compromised, it becomes challenging to regulate emotions and understand how our body is reacting to stress or anxiety. Healing trauma involves re-engaging with our emotions and bodily sensations, which rewires our brain. This process is known as neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to reorganize itself by forming new neural connections. When you start to engage with your emotions and bodily sensations, you begin to create new pathways in the brain that support emotional awareness and regulation. Over time, these changes contribute to a more balanced and adaptive nervous system, promoting overall mental well-being. Part 2. Trauma-Informed Therapies. As mentioned, cognitive behavioral therapy may not always be the most helpful for trauma survivors who struggle with physical anxiety. Trauma causes a buildup of physical tension, and our bodily responses often become the new enemy. Now, we'll outline multiple treatment approaches recommended by trauma experts which focus more on the body and past experiences. Eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, EDMR. Remember how we mentioned that trauma impacts the hippocampus? This brain area is responsible for processing and storing memories. In CPTSD, it can become suppressed, making it difficult for the brain to distinguish between past and present experiences. This is where EDMR can be especially helpful. EDMR is a therapeutic technique that uses rapid eye movements to help the brain process and reframe traumatic memories. The idea is that the eye movements in EDMR mimic the kind of neural activity that occurs during rapid eye movement sleep, a stage associated with memory processing and emotional regulation. This allows the hippocampus to reprocess these memories, shifting them from the emotional, reactive centers of the brain, like the amygdala, to a more neutral, less emotionally charged part of the memory system. It appears to free up trauma, allowing it to move over to regular memory. In The Body Keeps the Score, van der Kolk describes a patient who had severe PTSD for 13 years after a terrible car accident. After just 2 sessions of EDMR, she transformed from a helpless, panicked victim into a confident, assertive woman. Dialectical Behavior Therapy, DBT. DBT, developed in the 1980s by Marcia Linehan and her colleagues, is often considered a modified version of cognitive behavioral therapy, belonging to the third wave of CBT. The third wave builds upon traditional behavior therapy by incorporating mindfulness and acceptance strategies into its framework. Its founder, Marcia Linehan, has a diagnosis of borderline personality disorder and has had to deal with her own history of hospitalizations. DBT aims to help people remain in the moment, regulate their emotions, find healthy ways to tolerate stress, and improve their relationships. These objectives are addressed through 4 core modules: mindfulness, distress tolerance, emotion regulation, and interpersonal effectiveness. Internal Family Systems Therapy, IFS. IFS therapy was developed by Richard Schwartz, a family therapist who noticed that many of his clients spoke about parts of themselves. IFS therapy is based on the premise that we all have various subpersonalities labeled parts that can help us understand ourselves better. In addition, each of us has a core self, the part of us that's confident, compassionate, and undamaged. Developing a deeper understanding of our parts and tuning into our sense of self is how IFS helps us resolve our emotional issues. IFS teaches us that all our parts have positive intentions for us, even if this seems counterintuitive. We delve into parts in the Thinking Slow method. Here are some examples. The self-sacrificer fixates on putting everyone else's needs and wishes before your own, regardless of how you're feeling. This can be particularly detrimental to your well-being, resulting in a growing sense of resentment building up beneath the surface. The overcontroller helps you deal with distress and uncertainty by fixating on having as much control over things as possible, i.e., controlling your food intake, making an excessive number of lists, or using superstitious rituals to increase your sense of control. The perfectionist attempts to protect you from difficult feelings by setting extremely high standards for yourself, academically, professionally, personally, and socially. Somatic Experiencing, SE. SE was developed by Peter Levine, author of the popular book Walking the Tiger. SE is a body-oriented approach to overcoming trauma which teaches simple, useful skills that mobilize the body's self-healing systems. A therapist trained in this model will guide you through processes which aim to release the frozen, physiological states of overwhelm whilst tracking sensations, feelings, images, and movement in your body. Sensory Motor Psychotherapy. Sensory Motor Psychotherapy was developed by Dr. Pat Ogden in the 1970s. Sensory motor psychotherapy is a form of somatic psychotherapy influenced by neuroscience, cognitive and somatic approaches, attachment theory, and the Hakomi method. Hakomi is a type of therapy that focuses on mindfulness, empathy, and a loving presence. Pesso-Boyden System Psychomotor, PBSP. PBSP is a mind-body approach created by Albert Pesso and Diane Boyden, professional dancers who found out that when they urged their students to express their emotions through movement, they often reported a sense of psychological relief. It involves learning a number of exercises which help you to become more familiar with the sensory, motor, and emotional signals that provide information about the body, often in a group setting. Therapists trained in the Comprehensive Resource Model, CRM. CRM is a holistic therapeutic approach for trauma survivors developed by Lisa Schwartz, a psychologist who has specialized in severe dissociative disorders for over 25 years. CRM focuses on the mind-body connection, helping survivors to gradually process overwhelming experiences without re-traumatization. This method is particularly effective for people who've experienced severe trauma, including dissociation and attachment disruptions. Therapists trained in the Trauma Resiliency Model, TRM. Developed by Elaine Miller-Karas and others at the Trauma Resource Institute, TRM focuses on building resilience by emphasizing the body's natural ability to heal from trauma. TRM helps trauma survivors become aware of their body's reactions and provides tools to self-regulate, reduce arousal levels, and restore balance. It integrates knowledge of the autonomic nervous system and trauma physiology, offering exercises that focus on grounding, mindfulness, and self-soothing. Like CRM, TRM has a growing number of trained professionals who are skilled in these approaches. Tension, stress, and trauma release, TRE. While at a bomb shelter, Dr. David Bercelli noticed that, like animals, it's common for children to shake when they're scared. When he asked the parents if they ever got an urge to shake, they said they did, but they didn't want their children to see that they were scared. This gave him the idea to incorporate our natural tremor reflex into a treatment for stress reduction called tension, stress, and trauma release. The reflex of shaking or vibrating helps to release muscle tension and calms down our nervous system. Trauma survivors have reported feeling re-traumatized by TRE by doing too much too soon. It's important to start slowly and gradually build up. TRE practitioners recommend starting with 1 to 2 minutes, 2 to 3 times a week. The best option is to work with a professional. Cognitive Processing Therapy, CPT. CPT was developed by Dr. Patricia Rezic in the 1980s to help people recover from post-traumatic stress disorder following sexual assault. CPT is a type of cognitive behavioral therapy that helps you identify and challenge unhelpful beliefs related to your trauma, aiming to replace these with more balanced thoughts. The therapy is based on the idea that trauma can distort how a person views themselves, others, and the world. CPT teaches you how to process and reframe these thoughts, ultimately reducing the emotional impact of traumatic memories. It's often considered one of the most effective treatments for PTSD. Narrative Exposure Therapy, NET. NET was developed by Dr. Magna B. W. and Dr. Frank Neuner in the late 1990s. It's a short-term trauma-focused intervention designed primarily for survivors of organized violence, such as war, genocide, or torture. NET integrates elements of cognitive behavioral therapy with principles from narrative therapy, allowing you to reconstruct your life story, including the traumatic events, in a meaningful way. Accelerated Resolution Therapy, ART. ART was developed by Dr. Lainey Rosenweig in 2008. It's a relatively new evidence-based therapy that uses rapid eye movement techniques to help people process trauma. ART combines elements of traditional talk therapy with visualizations and eye movement techniques similar to those used in EMDR. Here are the key differences between ART and EMDR. ART uses eye movements, relaxation techniques, and visualization exercises to rapidly reduce emotional distress associated with trauma. Flexible, with a focus on addressing trauma quickly, often within 1 to 5 sessions. Shorter term, designed for fast emotional resolution without delving deeply into the trauma. Helps you replace distressing images of trauma with positive visualizations. Gaining recognition for providing rapid results in treating trauma, anxiety, and PTSD. Best for those seeking quick relief from trauma symptoms or those who want to address specific memories without extensive exploration. EMDR uses bilateral stimulation, e.g. eye movements, to help process traumatic memories and reduce their emotional intensity. Involves a structured 8-phase process that includes history taking, memory processing, desensitization, and reevaluation. Typically requires several sessions to work through memories and reduce stress. Aims to reprocess and integrate traumatic memories into a broader life narrative, making them feel more distant and less emotionally charged. Well established for treating PTSD and complex trauma. Best for people with severe trauma who require in-depth processing. If you're looking for long-term healing and are ready to commit to a deeper process, EMDR might be more suitable. If you want fast relief from vivid, distressing memories, or prefer not to disclose your trauma in detail, ART might be a better fit. For website links to trained therapists offering the approaches we've covered in this section, please refer to our ebook. Part 3: Physical Movement, Breathing, and Meditation Practices. Here are 5 practices that combine physical movement, breathing, and meditation. Yoga, Feldenkrais, Tai Chi, Qigong, and Taekwondo. What makes these practices so effective? Here are 4 reasons. First, they train us to notice muscle tension. For example, in yoga, sequences are designed to create a rhythm between tension and relaxation, increasing your awareness of where tension is held in your body. By recognizing this tension, you can learn to consciously relax these areas, both on the mat and in everyday life. Another reason is that they train us to notice and change our breath. Reconnecting with our breath is a powerful anchor for calming the mind and body. People with CPTSD often experience shallow or rapid breathing, triggering physical symptoms such as chest tightness and an increased heart rate. By consciously slowing down your breath, you can activate the parasympathetic nervous system associated with relaxation. Something else that makes these practices effective is that they highlight the impermanent nature of discomfort. If a particular pose is uncomfortable, you'll get used to staying with that discomfort until the pose is over, and you'll notice how those feelings eventually subside. This awareness of the impermanence of discomfort is a powerful tool in emotional regulation. In the same way that the discomfort of a challenging yoga pose eventually passes, so too do intense emotional experiences. By repeatedly experiencing and accepting temporary discomfort, you learn that emotions and physical sensations are not permanent. Another key benefit is that they help us notice connections between emotions and our body. The chest, hips, shoulders, and throat are thought to be the primary places where emotional tension resides in our bodies. Once you become aware of where you hold emotional tension, you can focus on movements and postures that target that area and release those feelings. A study by Van der Kolk and colleagues found that 20 weeks of yoga practice increased activation in the insula, another brain area impacted by CPTSD. The insula plays a crucial role in processing bodily sensations, emotions, and integrating sensory information. In CPTSD, the insula can become dysregulated, often resulting in heightened sensitivity to bodily sensations, particularly those tied to stress, trauma, and anxiety. Yoga and mindfulness practices have been shown to help regulate the insula's activity. These practices help you become more attuned to your bodily sensations without being overwhelmed by them. This regulated attention and increased bodily awareness allows you to develop better emotional regulation and a healthier relationship with your physical sensations. By the way, if you'd rather not be touched, let the instructor know before you start the class, as it's common for yoga teachers to physically adjust parts of your body during poses if they feel they can be optimized. It's important to find a slow-paced beginner's class. You could contact the teacher and ask for their advice on whether the class would be appropriate for a beginner wanting to take things slowly. Alternatively, you could try it in the comfort of your own home using YouTube videos. Check out our ebook for some recommendations for each type of physical movement, breathing, and meditation practice. Part 4. Relational Healing. Traumatized human beings recover in the context of relationships. With families, loved ones, AA meetings, veterans organization, religious communities, or professional therapists. The role of these relationships is to provide physical and emotional safety, including safety from feeling shamed, admonished, or judged, and to bolster the courage to tolerate, face, and process the reality of what happened. Bessel van der Kolk. Four Essentials of Quality Relationships. Pete Walker, author of Complex PTSD, From Surviving to Thriving, describes four qualities that he believes are essential to the development of trust and subsequent relational healing. 1. Empathy. Feeling truly heard and understood by the other person is a fundamental element of therapeutic human connection. Many people on the CPTSD spectrum have suffered greatly because emotionally immature caregivers were unable to display empathy to them as a child. 2. Authentic vulnerability. This refers to our ability to be open and vulnerable about our emotions with another person. If we didn't see this being role modeled by our caregivers growing up, it makes sense that practicing it might feel uncomfortable. If you're very disconnected from your emotions, it might even feel out of reach. Lacking authentic vulnerability with caregivers may also mean that our cravings for this type of connection are intensified in adulthood. This longing could lead to behaviors such as oversharing early in relationships in an attempt to speed up the process of connection. When talking of his experience with his therapist who demonstrated her authentic vulnerability to him, Walker notes, "I needed to experience all that the less than shiny bits of me were acceptable to another human being. Seeing that she was comfortable with and accepting of her own unhappy feelings eventually convinced me that she really was not disgusted by mine." Walker calls the opposite of authentic vulnerability emotional perfectionism, the inauthentic display of always being okay. 3. Dialogicality. The next essential quality for relational healing is dialogicality, the equal exchange of speaking and listening that takes place within a relationship. If one person tends to dominate the conversations, always bringing the focus back to themselves, the other will inevitably end up feeling unseen and unfulfilled by the relationship. The lack of balance can create frustration, resentment, or even a sense of isolation within the relationship. In healthy dialogical interactions, both people actively listen and respond, showing genuine curiosity and empathy for each other's perspectives. This balance helps build trust, strengthens the bond, and ensures that both people feel seen, supported, and fulfilled. 4. Collaborative relationship repair. Walker notes that this refers to the capacity to not only survive, but also grow closer from the inevitable breaks in attunement that are existential in every relationship of substance. He explains, "I believe one of the most common reasons clients terminate therapy prematurely is the gradual accumulation of dissatisfactions that they do not feel safe enough to bring up or talk about. How sad it is that all kinds of promising relationships wither and die for want of the ability to safely work through differences and conflict. As well as setting extremely high standards for themselves, people with CPTSD tend to project high standards onto others. Why? Here are some possible reasons. High standards can be a way of trying to control our environment and relationships to prevent further harm or disappointment. Trauma survivors might internalize the harsh criticism or neglect they experienced, leading to hypervigilance about their behavior and the behavior of those around them. A history of inconsistent caregiving can make it difficult to trust others, leading to heightened expectations as a way to test others' reliability. High expectations might also reflect an unmet need for recognition, both for themselves and in their relationships. They might overachieve or expect others to do so as a way of proving their worth. While high standards can sometimes drive personal growth, they can also put significant strain on relationships. When others fail to meet high standards, it leads to repeated feelings of disappointment. Over time, this can breed resentment, frustration, and emotional distance. Here are some ways to address this. Cultivate self-compassion to ease internal pressure. Recognize that mistakes are a natural part of growth and allow yourself and others the grace to be imperfect. Regularly acknowledge your own accomplishments and those of others. Understand that high expectations of others are closely related to splitting. Finally, learn how to recognize and manage splitting to reduce its impact on your relationships. When people let you down, it can feel especially painful if you've learned to hold high expectations of others as a form of self-protection. Unmet expectations can even feel catastrophic, as though they confirm past fears that others will ultimately disappoint. This makes it harder to distinguish between a one-time mistake and a genuine pattern. A trauma survivor notes, "I split on my partner all the time. What helps me is reviewing a list I made of all the things I appreciate about him. Journaling about my thoughts and stories helps me reframe them. When I'm splitting, my mind is super distorted to the negative, and I have to remind myself to see the bigger picture. I also find the TIPP skill from DBT very helpful." If someone has repeatedly crossed your boundaries, make sure to reiterate what those boundaries are and why they're important to you. When you're led to believe that your needs don't matter, setting boundaries in adulthood can feel foreign and uncomfortable. It might feel easier to cut people off than to deal with the inevitable discomfort involved in collaborative relationship repair. But here's the thing. Healthy relationships involve an ongoing conflict-repair cycle. Problems are an integral part of all relationships. If you've communicated well and someone's behavior still consistently falls short of your needs or boundaries, it's okay to reassess their role in your life. Want more guidance on this? In the Thinking Slow method, we explore the nonviolent communication model as a step-by-step framework for setting boundaries. We also take a deep dive into the practice of setting healthy boundaries in the 30-Day Mental Health Program, our audio-based guide to cultivating resilience and mastering your emotions. Other factors impacting relationships. Mental anxiety. As noted, this refers to unhelpful thinking patterns such as catastrophizing and threat scanning, which arise from a trauma survivor's reduced sense of safety. As Van der Kolk explains, faulty alarm systems lead to blow-ups or shutdowns in response to innocuous comments or facial expressions. Yes, you need to detect whether somebody is getting upset with you, but if your amygdala goes into overdrive, you may become chronically scared that people hate you, or you may feel they are out to get you. Experiencing these thinking patterns and associated emotions can lead to relationship conflict and instability when we lack the skills to deal with them effectively. Feeling like you're completely different to others. Many traumatized people feel chronically out of sync with others. It can be helpful to remind yourself that there are lots of people out there who feel this way. In the Thinking Slow method, we call this the disconnected story. A simple cognitive strategy for overcoming it is to start focusing more on similarities between you and others. Exaggerating differences can be seen as a subconscious defense mechanism to shield yourself from connection and vulnerability. Another common story is the unworthy story, which sounds like, "I'm fundamentally flawed." When you believe that you're unworthy, it may be difficult to accept love or care from others, leading to self-sabotaging behaviors, isolation, or difficulties with trust. The abandonment story is also common. This sounds like, "No matter how good things seem with someone, it's not going to last." If you fear abandonment, you might push people away preemptively, become overly clingy, or constantly test the boundaries of relationships. This can lead to a cycle of instability and emotional exhaustion. Becoming aware of your stories is a transformative step towards enhancing your relationships. It allows you to recognize when a particular narrative is triggering a cycle of unhelpful thinking, helping you avoid getting caught in an emotional roller coaster. Attachment styles. All of the struggles we've described are summarized in attachment theory as the fearful avoidant attachment style, also known as the disorganized attachment style. There are four main attachment styles that have been studied by researchers. Our attachment style shows up in our relationships with caregivers, friends, romantic partners, and even colleagues. Here are the fundamental differences between the attachment styles. Secure attachment, comfortable with closeness and distance. Anxious attachment, finds distance difficult. Avoidant attachment, finds closeness difficult. Fearful avoidant attachment, finds closeness and distance difficult. Relationships are hard work for everyone, but they're particularly challenging for people on the CPTSD spectrum. However, they're also the greatest source of our well-being. The longest-running study on happiness found that the quality of our social connections is the strongest predictor of our overall sense of well-being. If you're going to make an investment in your mental health, we'd argue a top priority needs to be improving the quality of your relationships. Connecting with other trauma survivors. Connecting with people with shared experiences is particularly helpful for healing as it's conducive to empathy. One trauma survivor commented, "Making my trauma non-existent is impossible, but I have found a means to making a meaningful purpose through it. Advocacy, volunteering, and helping other victims of trauma in even the most minute form lightens the weight of my trauma, gives me hope, and ultimately allows me to take back the power over my own recovery." Our free social connection planner outlines apps and websites for peer support, plus meetings and support groups. Find a link to it in our ebook. Healing through others. A trauma survivor asked their therapist, "Do you think it's impossible to be loved by others until you love yourself?" "No," she said very sincerely. "Long story short, my answer is no." I think that statement means well, because it encourages you to focus investment into yourself. But I think more often, it's taken out of context and does more harm than good. Sometimes we can find love for ourselves within us, and sometimes it's recognized through other people. Sometimes we need that love from others to help us find it in ourselves. So no, I don't think someone needs to wholly love themselves to be able to receive it from others. This sentence is worth repeating. Sometimes we need that love from others to help us find it in ourselves. It's important to remember that you don't have to be fully healed before seeking connection or dating. Relationships can be a source of healing, offering support and understanding as you grow together. Accepting love can help us love ourselves. Cultivating healthy, loving, trusting relationships helps us heal chronic shame. For people with CPTSD, romantic relationships can often trigger symptoms the most. The vulnerability that comes with love often brings up past wounds, resulting in emotional dysregulation. This can make relationships feel overwhelming, but it's crucial to remember that healing often occurs within the context of relationships. Supportive connections create opportunities for re-experiencing love and safety, helping to rewire the brain's trauma responses. Improving your relationships through the upward spiral. Interestingly, working on your mental well-being could result in you feeling more sociable. It's been found that compared with people experiencing a neutral mood, people experiencing positive mood show greater sociability, sense of connection, self-disclosure, trust in others, and compassion. Plus, the more time we devote to generating positive emotions in ourselves, the more pleasant our interactions with others become. Psychologist Barbara Fredrickson, a leading researcher in the field of positive emotions, labels this the upward spiral of positive emotions and health. Her research suggests social connection is a key factor in happiness and is associated with changes in our vagus nerve, an important component of the parasympathetic nervous system associated with relaxation. Fredrickson carried out a study exploring this with Bethany Koch and colleagues in 2013. Half of the study participants attended a 6-week loving-kindness meditation course. In the course, they practiced cultivating positive feelings of love, compassion, and goodwill towards themselves and others. For 2 months, participants in both groups reported their meditation, prayer, or solo spiritual activity, their emotional experiences, and their social interactions within the last day. Their vagal tone, the activity of their vagus nerve, was assessed twice, once at the beginning and once at the end of the study. The findings suggested that positive emotions, positive social connections, and vagal tone does indeed give rise to an upward spiral dynamic. They found that greater positive emotions prompted people to see themselves as more socially connected. Over time, as moments of positive emotions and positive social connections increased, vagal tone also improved. Fredrickson explains, "The daily moments of connection that people feel with others emerge as the tiny engines that drive the upward spiral between positivity and health. The Positive Emotions Journal in the Mental Well-Being Toolkit is designed to help you intentionally focus on and amplify positive emotions. For those with CPTSD, journaling can be especially helpful. By shifting attention toward positive emotions and experiences, the journal helps to counterbalance the brain's tendency to focus on distressing thoughts and memories. Improving connection through imaginal nurturing. Research shows that we can obtain the benefits of secure attachment that we didn't have early on through others in adulthood. This can be done through both real face-to-face contact or in our imagination. Amazingly, both are just as effective for rewiring our brain. Our brain doesn't know the difference between imagined and real scenarios. That's why it's possible for our physiology to change just by imagining an experience. A trauma survivor shares their experience on imaginal nurturing. My therapist suggested making up an imaginary dad and creating memories of him giving everything I needed as an infant, child, and teen. So I did. I found a picture of a dad on Pinterest holding a little blonde girl that reminds me of me, and I liked the way he looked. I gave him a job, interests, etc. And I've been vividly imagining him treating me the way I wanted, starting with infancy. I have only been doing it for 2 days, but my instinct tells me this is powerful. I do this with bilateral stimulation, tones, or tapping. I want to add that at first I felt guilty. Like bonding with this imaginary man when I have a dad who is trying to engage more and meet more of my needs now that I'm an adult. However, once I got into it, I realized how badly I needed it and stopped feeling guilty. So I have been imagining play, eye contact, telling me how much he loves me, taking care of basic needs, comforting me, etc. My therapist said that it can heal attachment wounds in about 6 months with consistent work. Anyway, I'm excited. It's so emotional, and it feels like my soul needed it badly. I feel like I needed the male figure rather than female adult me doing the nurturing and comforting. Affirmations. A mental well-being technique that we've found resonates well with our audience is that of positive affirmations. In fact, our most visited website page is called 76 Healing Trauma Quotes and Affirmations. Positive affirmations are short, uplifting statements that can help reframe unhelpful thoughts and instill a sense of positivity and calm. Here are 5 you could try. I deserve to be loved and treated well. I have a right to be heard and taken seriously. I am allowed to have feelings. All of my feelings are valid. It can be safe to let others close. Why not stick your favorite on a post-it note somewhere you'll see regularly? Head to our free tools library to download some mindful coloring sheets featuring these quotes and affirmations. 9 signs you're healing trauma. Healing from trauma takes time. For many, it's a lifelong journey of managing symptoms, processing past experiences, and building resilience. Developing new habits of thinking and behaving is hard. Healing is not linear. So, give yourself grace when you make mistakes. Be kind to yourself and acknowledge the effort you're making. Paying close attention to your progress can help you stay motivated in your healing journey. So without further ado, here are 9 signs that indicate you're healing from trauma. 1. You begin to feel safer in your own body. One of the first signs of healing is feeling more at ease in your own body. Instead of feeling disconnected or on high alert, you experience more moments of calm, and you're no longer as triggered by the sensations in your body. 2. You have better emotional regulation skills. You're able to recognize your emotions more clearly, and you're better at responding to them instead of reacting impulsively. 3. You take your thoughts less seriously. You recognize that thoughts are not facts. You remember that not every thought deserves your full attention. You begin to notice and challenge your brain's negativity bias. 4. You can reflect on your trauma without feeling overwhelmed. As you heal, the emotional intensity tied to past trauma begins to reduce. 5. You feel a stronger sense of trust. You begin to trust others and yourself again. You start to open up to people more easily and allow yourself to form deeper connections. 6. You're quicker to forgive. Whether forgiving yourself or others, you feel less burdened by resentment and more open to letting go of past hurts. You're more focused on collaborative relationship repair and feel committed to building healthier relationships. 7. You feel more comfortable setting boundaries. You say no when you need to, and you're more at ease asserting your needs. 8. You're more hopeful about the future. Your outlook on life becomes increasingly optimistic. You start to see a brighter path ahead. 9. You have a stronger sense of self-compassion. You start to treat yourself with more kindness and compassion, understanding that your trauma was not your fault and that you deserve love and care. Summary: issues are never resolved once and for all in therapy. Instead, therapist and patient inevitably return again and again to adjust and reinforce the learning. Indeed, for this very reason, psychotherapy has often been dubbed cyclotherapy. Irvin Yalom. Perseverance in our efforts to harness neuroplasticity is the sine qua non of rewiring our brains. By persevering in the use of new tools and techniques, we are stabilizing the new neural circuitry so that it can serve as a reliable platform of resilient behaviors, not easily overridden by the pulls of the past. Linda Graham. Above all else, healing from trauma requires your time, patience, and perseverance. As we've heard from the many trauma survivors who shared their experiences for this audiobook, healing is possible. Processing your trauma will help you build your sense of inherent worthiness. With a stronger sense of worthiness, you'll start to establish healthier boundaries and your relationships will improve. With time, you'll begin feeling safer in your own body, with others, and in the world. You have the power to rewire your brain and body. Self-education, trauma-informed therapies, physical movement, breathing and meditation practices, and quality human connection can help you heal. We'll finish this with a wonderful quote from a trauma survivor on the importance of patience, wisdom, and good experiences. Patience to take however long I need to recover, neither falling into apathy or trying to rush through the process. Understanding it may take time to undo the damage that was done, and that it is worth taking the time to heal. Wisdom to recognize where the past holds me back and when and where I can change to experience healthier relationships with both myself and others. The wisdom to know when I need to push myself for change, and when I need to show compassion to myself and be okay with who I am. The wisdom to know healthy relationships versus unhealthy relationships. Good experiences with others to remind me the world isn't all bad, that abuse is carried out not by an entire group of people, but by individuals who chose, consciously or not, to be that way, and that there are good people out there worth finding, that life can have good experiences out there worth living for and striving for. Good experiences to remind me that there is good in this world, and that I can have good experiences in my life too. Please refer to our ebook for a list of further reading and related tools for each of the four areas we've covered in this audiobook: self-education, trauma-informed therapies, physical movement, breathing and meditation practices, and relational healing. Our ebook also contains website links to many other helpful articles and resources. You've just listened to Understanding and Healing Trauma, a publication by the Wellness Society, narrated by Crystal Palmer. This audiobook is uncopyrighted, which means it's freely available for you to share on your website or other platforms without restrictions. We request that you include a link back to our website when sharing it. Thank you for taking the time to listen, and we wish you all the best in your healing journey.